This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
We are back from another fantastic trip internationally with Caliendo Sports International and Baseball Outside the Box. We mentioned it in our last talk, and we're back from a couple countries, but one of the best in the world that I think we can learn a lot from. We're back from Japan with our 15U team that competed throughout the Tokyo area. Prior to that, I had the privilege of being the instructor for the fifth time with some great international instructors at the World Children's Baseball Fair in Fukushima, Japan, home of the Olympics for 2020. Will be one of the Olympic baseball softball sites. There, our chairman of the World Children's Baseball Fair, Sada Araho, was there for the whole week with the kids. Just a great example, role model. He loves the kids and he loves working with them. And our instructors did a fantastic job. Our instructors came from all over. We had them from the U.S., Australia, Canada, Japan, Curacao, you name it. We had them from everywhere. So it was a lot of fun. And guess what? As you know, we've talked about it on the show many times. I've been to Japan over 20, 25 times, have worked with teams there, and I continue to learn something every time I go there. In my opinion, and not just mine, many coaches have been with me, one of the best baseball countries in the world. And what's great about it, and we'll talk about it, the Little League World Series is going on. And guess what? As soon as we got back, we're watching the World Series and also picking up things on TV. Just tremendous things. And I think you can learn from any country, but Japan is one of the best that I've been to. Hey, folks, this is Pete Caliendo. I am the host of Baseball Outside the Box. I'm glad you could join us. This is the show that interviews baseball's greatest baseball minds that love to challenge the status quo. What do I mean by challenge status quo? We just want to say, hey, if you've always done it this way, is there a better way to do it? And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the avenues of, is there always a better way to do something in the game so we can all get better constantly? Don't ever be satisfied with what you're doing. Always ask yourself, why am I doing it and can I do it better? So let's get rolling with the show we're excited about today. It's going to be a two-part series. The first part about Japanese baseball is going to be with a good friend of ours from the Chicagoland area, assistant varsity coach, infield instructor, and first base coach for Von Steuben High School in Chicago. And also, he's a youth coach for the Chicago Warriors. Currently, he's the manager of the 14U travel team. He's got a tremendous amount of experience, and he attends the Illinois High School Coaches Convention. But he's attended also the Mohegan, the ABCA. He's been everywhere. He's a young guy. Of course, I call him young because of my age, but he has tremendous knowledge. And guess what? He perseveres. And why? Because he's gone way outside the box. He's made it a mission last year to attend the Japan, the greatest high school baseball championships in the world called Koshian. He will tell you about it, but basically 56 teams, single elimination from all over Japan. They end up in Koshian, four games a day. 20 to 40,000 fans a game. It's an incredible event, national television. Nothing like it around. He's attended now his second. And I see him on social media all the time. He's constantly wanting to learn more and more, and he shares all that information with everybody out there. I think he's really done a great service and shown coaches that you just don't learn in the U.S., but you can go outside the U.S. He took that step that is not easy without knowing anybody there. He's going to tell us about it. So let's welcome our good friend from Chicago, Tom McGuire. Tom, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks a lot, Pete, for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you. And as I mentioned in the intro, it's great because you've got an open mind and you're always kind of trying to learn. I mean, everywhere I've been, all of a sudden, you know, you're there and more places. You're just constantly looking for a way to learn all the time. And that's great to hear. And that's why I want you on the show. So let's rock and roll. Let's talk. Let's get started. First of all, let's tell our audience, I mean, what sparked you into going to Japan? And I believe it was last year. You can correct me. This is your second year. What sparked you into doing this? And tell us about your first experience going to a country where not many people speak English and having to go to this major event.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Pete. So this is actually my fourth time that I've gone to Japan. So I first went in 2016. And the first 2 years that I went, I mainly just focused on professional baseball. So I had known over time that they played baseball in Japan, and I knew it was a pretty big deal over there. I didn't know how big exactly, but had heard about it. So the first two times I went with an American tour group. It's called Japan Ball. They take Americans on tours, or anybody really. There's Canadians that go on the trip as well. They take folks on trips over there. And basically what they do is take them to professional games throughout the country. So first two times, that's what I did. And during the course of that, and through some discussions with coaches here, as you mentioned, I coach with the Chicago Warriors. Joe Perona leads that program. I've learned a lot from him over time. He's done a lot for me. I think it was in a conversation with him, he had first mentioned Koshien and the high school baseball in Japan. So I believe that's where I first heard about it. So after I got familiar with Japan the first couple times, seeing professional games, I thought that was nice. Wanted to get into more of the amateur level baseball and kind of make it a objective or goal to get to the Koshien tournament, which is, as you might have mentioned already, held in Osaka or the Osaka area every summer in the August timeframe. So last year was the first time that I wanted to head over there and see Koshien. Yeah, as I mentioned, last year was the first year that I went to see Koshien and knew some things about it. I'd done some research online, knew that pretty much all tickets are first come, first serve, general admission, things like that. So, so went to Japan last year. It was, again, the third time that I've gone, and I just went on my own this time, whereas in prior years, I had went with a tour group, so I was always with someone else. But this time, went by myself over there and just say, well, hey, I'm going to try to figure it out once I get over there and see what it's like. Didn't know if I was going to be able to get into the games. Obviously, I didn't have any pre-sale tickets or anything like that. I didn't know if people would speak English over there, or how things would go. So I spent a couple days in Tokyo area, and then I was watching TV in my hotel room and saw the tournament on TV. And kind of leading up to it, I'd seen some things on Twitter about it. And once I saw it on TV and I was in Japan, I had planned maybe to spend a couple of days other places around the country. I thought, well, I have to get there. I can't wait any longer. I've got to get there. So I took the next train. When you're in Japan, you can get a rail pass. I took the next train to Osaka and tried to get in as early in the morning as I could, and then took the next train out to Koshien Stadium, which there's a professional team that plays at Koshien Stadium. It's the Hanshin Tigers, so it's owned by a railway company in Japan, the Hanshin Railway. So you actually can take the Hanshin Railway out to Koshien, so that's what I did. I took the train out there and ended up at Koshien Stadium, and let me tell you, there was lines everywhere, and they were long lines, and it was hot. August is the hottest time of year in Japan. There were just lines everywhere, and of course, nobody spoke English, so I had I thought, well, maybe I'll be able to get into the game. Once I got there, those hopes were dashed pretty early on. So pretty much the first day I was there, that first morning, was just figuring out what all the different lines meant. Basically, it boils down to four different lines that you can stand in to get tickets. So I asked around. I eventually found a security guard who could speak English or speak some English, and he kind of explained to me, this is what this line is. This line's for first base. This line's for the outfield. This line's for third base. If you're a supporter of one of the teams, you get in this line. And, another question I had for him was, well, how early do I have to get here to get tickets? And he said, well, generally people start lining up at 5 a.m. And last year, games would start at either 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. So this is, getting there 3-4 hours in the morning before the game start, just to have a chance at getting tickets. So I knew that day there was no chance that I was going to get in. So I said, thanks to the guy for the information. I went back to Osaka, you know, during that day and said, well, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do all I can to get into the stadium. So I'm going to get there early and get in line. And so for that first visit, that's kind of what happened. I would get there, you know, very early in the morning, wait in line. So normally you're waiting for 2 or 3 hours at least in line with a bunch of other Japanese people. You're pretty much the only Western person there. And you eventually hopefully get to the front and they don't run out of tickets and you get your ticket and you go in. And as I mentioned, it's general admission. So basically, if you're in the line for the third base section, you get your ticket for the third base section and then you can go in and sit wherever wherever you want in that section. So that's how it worked out that first time that I went to the tournament, basically just showing up and trying to get in wherever I could in the stadium. The second time I went, so this year, this past August, I went again and had the learning experience of the prior year, just knew how everything worked. So, and actually I had some contacts in Japan. So I was able for the first day to get a pre-sale ticket, which was a signed seat behind home plate. The guy who got me the ticket, he said he tried for 2 hours because I had actually put in an order with him to get tickets for every day because I planned to be there Monday through Friday in Osaka, and I planned to go to the tournament every day if I could. And I put in an order with the guy. I said, okay, get me tickets Monday through Friday. And he said, no problem. He didn't think it would be a big deal. I got an email back from the day the tickets went on sale, and he said, I spent 2 hours trying to get tickets for you, and I was only able to get one set of tickets for the first day for Monday, which for me, that was better than nothing. It was a lot better situation than I had the prior year, which was having to wait in line all the days, which is pretty tiring. So it was really nice to get tickets for at least one day. And that's, you know, that was the plan. So first day, Monday, got there, was able to relax, roll into the stadium with the assigned seats, you know, so enjoyed those. And then the other days, I just kind of played it by ear. I knew I wanted to go to at least 3 days. So normally, you know, I'd plan for like maybe a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, something like that. You know, just depending on if you had to get there early and wait in line, then you'd know, well, it's a long day of baseball, so probably take the next day off because you'd be tired. So this year, I think I went to 4 days total. So I went to Monday and then Tuesday. I didn't have a ticket, but I just showed up to try to figure out some more about how the lines worked. Ended up getting in, which is kind of an interesting story. Maybe I can tell you in a little bit. Wednesday went and got in, I think, a little bit later because I ended up spending all day Monday and Tuesday at the park. So Wednesday showed up a little bit later. Thursday, there was a typhoon in Japan, so they canceled all the games. And then Friday was my last day planning to go to Koshien. So I got there early in the morning, got in line. Again, you're normally trying to get there between 4 and 5 a.m. because the first trains start rolling into Koshien around 5:20 or so. So you want to try to get in line before that. Otherwise, the lines are just going to get really long. So Friday was my last day there. And as you mentioned before, there's 3 or 4 games a day. I think every day that I went, it was a 4 game. So I saw 4 games Monday, 4 games Tuesday, and then a couple games Wednesday, and then another 4 games on Friday. So ended up being about 12 to 15 games, something like that, if I do the math right.
All right, Tom, listen, I want to jump into a couple things. One, you know, obviously all the times you've been there, you've got a pretty good handle now on how Koshien works, how things are going there, the excitement behind all the games. But you mentioned something about going there earlier and seeing professional baseball. Let's jump back a second to pro ball, some of the games that you went to. Is there anything for our audience during the pro games? You know, I know you take a lot of notes and you're always looking and taking pictures and videos, which is the thing to do so we can remember everything. Is there things that kind of were unique that you said, you know, I need to make sure that I tape this or videotape it because – one, it's unique, but two, it could be interesting to coaches, parents, and players back in the U.S. and possibly utilize within, you know, practices or games, anything prior to the game or during the game?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, with the professional games, it's similar, you know, in mechanics to American games. So I didn't notice a ton during the professional games. I mean, the thing that's really big over there is the atmosphere. So the thing is, when your team is batting, all of your team supporters are going to be making noise. So they're playing instruments, they're chanting, they're playing drums. It's very different from the U.S., where typically the crowd's going to be a little quiet during those times. So from an atmosphere perspective, it was really fun. And obviously you could see a very intense focus on technique. You know, everything's real smooth. The pitchers will hold on their post and their windup. Batters will typically do high leg kicks, very slow, under control. So I guess that's one thing, you know, a lot of coaches talk about is move your feet, you know, slow feet, early timing. You know, as soon as the pitcher starts to move, you're starting your movement. So you saw a lot of that over there. And again, a lot of kind of leg kicks was the technique on hitting. So leg raises, early movement, slow movement, slow in control. Those are the main things. And actually, it's interesting in Japan, it's because this isn't the case here in the U.S. any longer, is that the teams will take infield, outfield before the game. So you can see some things happen there. I don't remember a ton, I guess, from the professional games, but it is interesting to watch them. If you get there early, you know, at least an hour before the game, you'll see them take infield, outfield, which is an interesting experience. And just from some reading that I've done, you know, at least in the past, I don't know if it's such the case anymore, but the Japanese teams, they feel such an obligation to their fans. I was reading about a team that lost 10 games in a row or something like that. They're on this terrible losing streak. And they actually, after the 11th game that they lost, they came out and they bowed to the fans. You know, they said, "We're sorry that our performance has been so poor." And so they actually acknowledged that they were playing terribly, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Tremendous respect for the game. You can see that pretty much, I think, in every game at all levels. And I know now, you know, folks, if you want to get a visual of this, you can go to Google Koshian. We'll put it on the show notes. We'll also have times information on the show notes. So if you want to get a hold of them, but Google it and Google the documentary and check that out, and you'll get a very good visual effect of Koshian. I want to jump to Koshian now, Tom, because that's the one I think you focused on the most. So let's get into Koshian. Let's get into some of the things that, you know, you observed, whether it be in pregame, whether it be in batting practice or anything else, and during the game, you observed that helped you as a coach maybe become better, that you maybe have started to implement with your younger club, your 14U team.
Yeah, sure. And just to tell you, getting to Koshian and watching the games there, it's almost like information overload. I mean, because it's every you know, every other minute you're writing something down, or you're taking note of something, or you're just engaged. I mean, at least for me, and the thing is, I have a musical background. My mom was a band teacher, and a lot of people in my family were band teachers. The reason why I mention that is because the schools that compete in Koshian, one of the big things is that they bring their bands to the games. So they're always playing. And as I mentioned earlier, the tradition is that while your team's batting, your supporters are going to be making noise. And so for Koshian, the team's bands are playing while they're batting. So they'll play lots of music. And it's all pep band music, so they're, you know, playing trombones and tubas and trumpets and clarinets and all that's going on. So it's just a very engaging atmosphere. And just to back up just one second, Pete, and then we'll get into some things that I noticed that I took back to the team here, was that Koshien. It's called Koshien because it's played in Koshien Stadium, which, as we mentioned, was just outside of Osaka. And it's really interesting because that stadium, it's a professional style stadium, but it was built specifically for this high school tournament. And the local team is, I may have mentioned earlier, is the Hanshin Tigers, which is a professional team that plays in the Japanese professional league there. That's their home stadium. And this tournament kicks that team out of the stadium for the duration of the tournament. So let's say, you know, the tournament's 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a little bit less. So this professional team has to play on the road this entire time that this tournament is going on. And it happens multiple times. So they have a spring tournament. They have the summer tournament, which I went to, and they may have a fall tournament as well. I'm not as familiar with that one. So anyways, that's interesting that, you know, could you imagine a high school tournament kicking out the Cubs or the White Sox from the stadium for a period of time, putting them on a road trip? It's kind of interesting. So to get into some of the things that I picked up, there's a heavy reliance on the players and their experience in Japanese high school baseball, from what I've seen, and the focus is all on their experience and what they get out of it. How does that manifest itself? Well, this is a national championship tournament, as you mentioned, 56 teams. You would think that this is the most important thing that's going to happen for these kids, and the managers, the coaches, the adult coaches are going to be all over this, you know, with strategy and giving signs and all that kind of thing. And the funny thing is that the first base and the third base coaches are actually kids. And as I learned over time is that these kids have been given this role, and through the whole season, that's their role on the team. They may not play that much, but they're given the role of, you are the third base coach. So, and you are the first base coach. So it's not adults coaching the bases, whereas normally you'd see in the U.S., you'd see an adult, you know, like myself with Von Steuben, I'm coaching first base and our head coach is coaching third base. And that's not the case in Japan, at least in high school baseball. It's the players are the coaches. Now, they'll look into the dugout for signs. So the manager will give signs from the dugout. But the players making decisions are making the decisions about if they should send this player home. They're giving encouragement. They're giving instruction. So that was one of the main – that was the first thing that you'll notice. And you even saw this, as you mentioned, Pete, with the Little League World Series. You know, Japan was playing earlier today, and if you looked, it was a young kid coaching first base. Now they had a adult coaching third base, but even for the Japanese Little League World Series team, it was a kid coaching first base. So that's one thing. Now, could you do that in the U.S.? It might be tough. I think from now, I'll say with my teams, I have not. We experimented with that. We have fall ball that goes on. We did at one point have the kids coach both bases, but from a safety perspective, you know, I'd prefer to be out there at third base. I'd hate to have something, you know, a ball get down to the third baseline and hit a kid. So just from a safety perspective, you know, I've coached third base, even though I've seen it done this way. I'm sure in Japan, and actually just from discussions that I've had with folks about this, and as I learned over time, that the adult manager or the team coach, he can't even step on the field while coaching is going on. So, you know, there's a whole range of things that they have to rely on the players to do. So as an example, pitching changes or mound visits, it's not an adult coach going out there to do the mound visit. It's a kid. So normally what you'll see is you'll see the kid come up to the manager. The manager will talk to him, give him some instructions, and he'll send the kid out there to do the mound visit with the pitcher. And then the kid will come running back in. And I also saw something interesting. There were not many arguments about calls or disputes about calls, even from the players. There was not you never saw any disrespect to umpires or anybody else. But there was one kind of questionable call that happened during one of the games I was watching. And remember that I mentioned that the adult coach, he can't step on the field. So what ended up having to happen was the coach had to pull a player aside, talk to him, ask him, this is what I want to say to the umpire, or ask the umpire. He sent the kid out there to talk to the umpire. The kid comes back, explains to the coach. The coach says something else to the kid, sends him back out there. So there was this kind of back and forth that was going on between the umpire and the kid and the coach, where the kid was having to relay information from the coach. So I found that interesting. And then in the end, the umpire, and this is something that happens in Japan, it's kind of interesting, I think even in professional baseball, is that they get on the public announce, the PA, you know, they have a microphone, they get on the PA and they announce like what the call was. And this only happened once. This is not like it's happening all the time, but it's like almost in the NFL where the referee gets on the mic and he explains the call and what the penalty was. It was the same thing over there in a high school game. The umpire was getting on the microphone and explaining to the stadium what had happened. But again, that only happened once, but I thought that was interesting.
Tom, question I want to ask you. Did you get a chance, you know, with the kids coaching the bases and going out to the mound, and you had some discussions with some people there, did you get a chance to ask them what was the reasoning behind this? Because it's very interesting, and there's a lot of learning that goes on, obviously, when the players are on the bases. They get to learn a lot, and it's a level playing field. But was there a particular reason that they did this, or was it real hard because of the translation?
No, yeah. What I've come to understand, and this is what I think is interesting about Japanese baseball, and has caused me to think a lot about, well, what's the purpose of baseball in America, or what's the purpose of it? Just from watching so many games and seeing the things that have happened and the way they do things, I get the strong impression that this whole experience is to build the young men and the young women. There's managers on the team as well that are women in the high school. But I get the impression that the whole experience is about the player, and it's to build them into stronger people, and people that will be able to contribute to society, you know, eventually. And, you know, if you read about Japanese high school baseball, and I have a friend who lives in Japan, we've become close, you know, we spent some time together at Koshien, and he's telling me, and I knew a little bit about this, but he would tell me about Japanese high school baseball and just what's required. And at some schools, it's a very serious endeavor. And, it's serious at schools in the U.S., but I don't think that we quite take it this far. Some schools, in a lot of schools, actually, I mean, I think this is pretty common. I think that they'll play year round. It's a year round thing at the high school. So they don't play other sports, which is, you know, a different conversation. But I won't make any comments there. But they don't play other sports. And again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, or we could talk about that some other time, but they play baseball year round, and how their schedule goes, at least at some of the schools, I'm sure it differs if a school's not as serious about baseball, but from some of the teams that make it to Koshien, and from what I've read about it, is they'll have practice in the morning before school. So maybe they'll practice at 6 a.m., before they go into school. They'll go into school 8 a.m. till the early afternoon. And then what do they do afterwards? Well, they go back to baseball practice in the evening, and they may practice for a couple more hours. And then they get something to eat, and they go to bed, and they do it all over again. So it's at some schools, it's a year-round thing like that. And the reason why I guess I got on this or to mention this is that they work really hard, and they push the kids hard, and they teach a lot of discipline. And in Japan, what could it be about? Is it about winning or losing? I don't think it's about winning or losing. I think it's about building kids that will be strong, that will contribute to society, that learn discipline, that do the right thing. So why, you know, your original question was, why do they have the kids coach the bases? Why do they have them do the mound visits? I think it's because it's all about the kid, and it's about their development, and it's about growing them into people that will be good contributors to society once they're done with baseball. And just to add one more thing, Pete. So another thing that's interesting, and we can talk more about the respect maybe in a little bit, but just one tidbit on this is that after they do infield, outfield, the team, and it was amazing, and this is another thing, it was amazing the consistency among the teams. So these are 56 teams, but they all had the same mannerisms, and they all did the same, very similar things. Like, you know, all the mannerisms were very similar. But one thing that happens after they do infield, outfield, is they'll line up on, so the coach hits the last couple grounders, you know, it's pretty standard stuff. So they'll do like a coming four type thing. So the infielders will throw it to the catcher, and then they'll run in and they'll stand on the baseline to finish off infield, outfield. The coach will hit a pop-up to the catcher, just like it's done here in the U.S. Catcher will catch the pop-up, and then he'll get in line along the first base or the third base baseline, whichever dugout they're in. And what they'll do is they'll bow twice usually. They'll bow once to the field, and then they'll turn to the opposing team. They'll face the opposing team, and they'll bow to the opposing team. Now, pretty much every team bowed to the field. That was pretty consistent. The one thing that wasn't as consistent was they didn't all bow to the opposing team. And I noted this. I was there with my friend, and I said, you know, hey, they bowed to the opposing team. And my friend's Japanese. He played baseball in Japan and came to the U.S. for junior college baseball, played 2 years here. And he looked at me and he said, yes, that coach is teaching them that it's more than baseball. And I just think in general, that's the theme in Japan, that it's more than baseball.
What has Tom McGuire picked up now once the games began? And, you know, there's a lot, I know there's a lot of excitement there, and the heat is excruciating. And I know a lot of fans wearing, you know, like ice packs on their shoulders, and it's really hot. But during the games, what have you picked up to help yourself as a coach? Give us some areas that we don't do in the States that they might do there that we might implement here.
Well, one thing, I mean, there's several things, but one thing is hustle, you know, and playing the game the right way. And sometimes you don't know that the game can be played that way until you see it. And, you know, now that I've seen it and I've seen it played in a certain way, I know that, well, it can be played this way, and you can demand that players hustle and that they run balls out. So that's one thing, is hustle. So obviously they hustle onto the field, they hustle off the field, and they also run balls out. You know, they run hard to first base, they run hard to second base. So one main thing is a reminder to myself that the game can be played this way, and you don't have to accept it if a player is not hustling, or he's not making proper effort. It's just a great reminder that you don't have to accept that. The other thing is just respect for the game. And, you know, this is a cultural thing in Japan. Respect is a huge thing over there. So some of it's a little bit hard to implement here. But one thing that I picked up on, and that you did as well, Pete, and I know that other coaches have enjoyed, is that, and this is going back to the mannerism thing that's amazingly consistent among Japanese team, like even the finest detail. And one thing that I'm thinking about is when the team departs the field, so they make three outs and they leave the field, they always make a point of getting the ball back to the pitcher's mound. So some player, let's say this, they make three outs on the field. The ball ends up in the first baseman's glove because he caught the final out of the inning to get the batter runner out. And they're going to the first base dugout. So, you know, in America, what will happen is that first baseman will just kind of roll the ball towards the pitcher's mound, not really caring about where it goes, and he'll just go off into the first base dugout, whatever. Nobody cares about where the ball ends up. What happens in Japan is the first baseman catches the ball. The shortstop will come, because he's coming to the first base dugout across the field, he'll come running with his glove up in the air, calling for the ball. The first, you know, he's asking the first baseman, throw me the ball, throw me the ball. The first baseman will throw it to the shortstop. The shortstop will catch it. And it depends, you know, and again, it's a little bit different, even though I said that Japanese teams are amazingly consistent. Sometimes this is a little different between teams, but what will happen is the shortstop will catch the ball. He'll take the ball out of his glove and he'll very carefully place it on the pitching rubber. He'll place it right there in the pitching rubber, and they'll run off the field. You know, so they're showing respect for the game. They're showing respect for the opponent. They're sending a message. I mean, in my mind, this is how I take it, is that they're sending a message that the opponent matters, but they're playing the game. You know, they're playing the game. They're playing the ball. They're not necessarily playing the opponent. Both teams are playing the game. They're not playing each other. And they're showing great respect for the game, for their opponent, by placing the ball right respectfully, you know, very carefully, right on the mound, so that when the other team comes out there, they know exactly where the ball is and they can find it. And so, while I mentioned some things, and hopefully we'll talk about this, but there are some things that are tougher to implement. But that is one thing that we did with our 14-year-old team this past year. And then they had a lot of fun with it. And we explained it to them in the sense that, hey, we want to pay attention to detail here. So when we're leaving the field, let's not just throw the ball anywhere. Let's leave it on the mound. You know, let's leave it on the pitching rubber. That's showing respect for the other team, and it's showing attention to detail for our team, you know, which is a skill, something that's going to happen, that's going to help us if we're running relays, if we're doing any other thing in this game, which requires a lot of attention to detail. We're practicing that when we're leaving the field. And the kids really took to it, you know, and they did it. I didn't, you know, sometimes you think, well, I'm going to have to remind them all the time. This is going to be silly. But they really took to it. I didn't have to remind them. They did it every time. It became kind of a fun thing. It's at times, like, it, maybe to a little bit of a ridiculous degree, like they'd be throwing alley-oops to each other, like they're coming off the mound, like tossing it to each other before someone finally puts it on the mound. But it was, it was something that we did. And one thing that was funny was that over the course of the season, we were playing in a tournament, and we played a team that had someone associated with their team. I think, you know, let's just say he was the boyfriend of a mom of one of the players on the team, but this guy, he's Japanese, you know, he was wearing Hanshin Tigers hat. So I talked to him before the game a little bit. I said, oh, hey, Hanshin. I told him I'd been there. And after the game we played, and I went up to him after the game and I was like, well, did you notice some of the things that we did? And he said, yes, I saw when you guys would leave the field that you would put the ball, you know, very respectfully on the mound. I noticed that. So that was one major thing major, minor, I guess, but just one thing that we took and implemented this past year.
Well, I got to believe, you know, I mean, I've been to plenty of games in the U.S. in 37 years, and, you know, the Japanese have tremendous respect for their equipment. On top of it, if folks, if you want to check out Ichiro, Google Ichiro, and you'll see a documentary on him also, how he handles his equipment, not just him, but all the Japanese. And you know what, Tom, it's a relief to see stuff like that, because, you know, we're always seeing, you know, kids throwing bats, throwing helmets. I have a hard time believing and understanding how a respectable coach could allow any player at any level to throw their bat, throw their helmet, to throw their glove into the dugout. Not only disrespect the equipment, but disrespect the game in some ways, and not really teach any proper mannerisms. So they may take it to the extreme, but I think we in the U.S. need to really wake up a little bit and start teaching at the younger levels respect for the equipment, respect for the field, respect for other things. And, you know, that's why I wanted to ask you, because you've got a lot of great stuff on your Twitter page, and we're going to put that Twitter page on the show notes so people can go to it. One of the photos that I saw was when we talk about respect equipment, but also respect their own teammates, and they've got great work ethics together. You know, we saw a picture of guys helping the catcher put their equipment on. What'd you think about that?
Oh yeah, that's outstanding. Just explain that a little bit more. I call it the catcher pit stop. So, you know, let's say the catcher was batting during that inning, and he gets on first base, and then they make three outs, and he's got to come off the field. So normally in the U.S., in here, and I say these things, and I don't mean to say, you know, Japan is way better than the U.S. or one's better than the other. There's positives and negatives to both areas. I just love some of the things I saw over there, so I have a lot of enthusiasm for it. So anyways, catcher comes off, and you know what might happen in America is the player will come to the bench, and he'll sit down on the bench and take some time putting on his gear. What would happen over there is the catcher would not go into the dugout. He would come out near the on deck circle, and there would be at least three players that would come out to meet him. One player would be on his left leg, one player would be on his right leg, and what they'd be doing is putting on his shin guards. Another player would be there holding the catcher's glove, his chest protector, and he'd have a glass of water, and he'd hand the glass of water to the catcher. The catcher, as the players are putting the shin guards on the player, he's getting a drink of water. Once he's done with the water, he'll hand the cup back. The other player will hand him his chest protector. He starts to put the chest protector on. He'll hand him the mask. He'll hand him the glove. The players are helping get the catcher ready and servicing the catcher, you know, giving him this pit stop. So that was one thing. And just to add a point about handling the equipment and just respect for the equipment, Pete, it's really one really funny thing is that my friend, you know, one of the first day I met him in Osaka, he said, okay, well, we're going to go out and we're going to look at baseball equipment shops. And I was like, cool. I'd never been to a baseball equipment shop in Japan, or at least one specifically for baseball. So let's go. So we went to one of the stops we made was the Mizuno store in Osaka. And an item, you know, related to the thing that you mentioned that's very popular in Japan, and I can't say that I've seen one here in the U.S., is that they have a bag, and it's specifically for the bat. You know, you can't fit anything else. You know, when we say bat bag in the U.S., we're kind of envisioning a bag that you put bats in, but you also put your cleats and you put your gloves in. In Japan, if you say bat bag, and they actually sell these in the store, it's just a bag, mm-hmm. and it's only for your bat. You know, that's the only thing that can fit in there. So they got a bag specifically for your bat. And I've never seen that in the U.S. I actually looked earlier today on it because I meant to pick one up when I was over there, but I didn't. So I looked on Amazon today, and it's a little tough to come by. There's a couple out there, but they're not.
You know, what's interesting, Tom, is, you know, it's the game itself. Our game is evolving. You know, we're always figuring out ways to speed up the game. And I'm all for it. If you can figure out ways, I guess, to speed up the game, make it a little bit more interesting, a little bit more entertaining. You know, two ways that I could think of right now that are not unique. One, how about, like you said, hustling on and off the field constantly. When you do that, the game will go a little bit quicker because the half an inning is not going to take as long. And two, the catcher, as you mentioned, you know, when you're helping the catcher out, the equipment's getting out a little quicker. We can get that catcher out there a little faster. I mean, just little things like that. And you mentioned the attention to detail the Japanese have. What other things did you see that, you know, you just said, wow, I mean, they really thought through this. And I know one specific photo, and I'll lead into it, and I've seen it before, and I, you know, during infield, outfield, I mean, and if you really think about this, they've got a young man with a ball bucket where they're handing the ball to the coach. He's not even looking back. He's just putting his hand behind him, and the guy's giving him the ball. Now, you know, yes. That's attention to detail. That's making things go faster. That's keeping people interested. So that's the kind of stuff that we want to share with our audience.
Yeah, so that's a great one, Pete. And this is something that my friend mentioned as we're watching the game. And it is funny. The Japanese are very on, well, at least the ones I've met, or at least from the impression I've gotten, is that they're very on point. And so the first game, let's just say the first game ends, and my friend says, okay, next game will start 30 minutes from now. So it was, say, quarter to one. And he said, okay, quarter after one, the game is going to start. The next game is going to start. So the first game just ended. The second game, they're saying, is going to start exactly 30 minutes later. So what happens in between those 30 minutes, or in between those two times? Well, one thing is, both teams have got to get warmed up. They've got to take infield, outfield, and they've got to completely clean the field. So there's a full maintenance crew there, and this actually got a lot of responses on Twitter, as coaches are really interested in it. Was they have these and I actually maybe haven't had enough experience with this to appreciate this as much, but in Japan they have a lawn tractor that's basically shoots out water and rakes the field at the same time. You know, so it hydrates the field and cleans up the field at the same time. A lot of coaches love that. So they got to do that. They got to clean the whole field. So each team has, and my friend said this, has 6 minutes for infield, outfield, and they got to stick to 6 minutes. So 12 minutes total for both teams. And then they have, whatever's left over, 18 minutes for cleaning the field, doing all the pregame rituals. So yeah, so basically when they're doing infield, outfield, they have basically a relay line set up around the coach, you know, starting from the coach all the way around to first base. So maybe there'll be a couple players down the first base line, and they'll catch the ball. So the first baseman will catch the ball. Say they're doing everybody's going one on infield, outfield. They're on the infield portion. They're all going one. The first baseman will catch the ball. He'll flip it to the guy behind him, and then they'll relay it in. And there's a guy right next to the coach, right behind the coach. He has a ball, and this is something else I haven't really seen in the U.S., but he has a ball bucket that's on a, you know, that has a shoulder strap, basically. And he's got it strapped over his shoulder with his ball bucket, and he is feeding the coach the balls. And how the coach does it is pretty funny. I call it the no-look pickup, because all the coach does is he hits a ground ball, and then he reaches behind without looking at the player. He reaches behind his back. The player puts the ball in his hand, and the coach reaches back and then continues hitting the fungo. So it's going like this, and it's moving very fast. So they got this relay system set up, a guy that's feeding the coach right into his hand. The coach isn't looking at him, and he's hitting balls every couple seconds. He's hitting another ball to an infielder, and they don't stop. You know, if a player makes a mistake, they don't moan about it. They don't take a lot of time. They just keep going. They just say, okay, get the next one. Let's go. You know, so that's definitely one thing I've taken back to here, is when we do infield, outfield, is just keep moving, try to keep it moving. Don't stop and make adjustments, or try to make adjustments. Just try to keep moving, which I think is a important lesson too, is the game doesn't stop. You just got to move on. In talking about speeding up the game too, Pete, just one thing I wanted to mention on that was, you mentioned about the catchers getting help from other players. The other thing that happens, and this happens in professional baseball as well in Japan, is that the pitcher will start warming up before three outs are made. So his team's playing offense. You know, maybe there's one or two outs for his team. The pitcher will get up and he'll start throwing on the side. So he'll start throwing maybe just a little bit farther down from his dugout, or maybe they'll go to the bullpen. He'll start throwing so that when the third out is made and the pitcher takes the field with his defense, he really only needs two or three warmups before they can get the game moving again. So they really don't take a lot of time in between innings. And one of the ways they achieve that is they have the pitchers starting to warm up before their team makes three outs on offense. And that was something that we tried with our team last fall, and I was really on top of them about doing it, is that, okay, you know, if you're not batting or, you know, coming up soon and you're the pitcher, let's start getting you thrown a little bit on the side. And so that when we get out there, you don't need a lot of time to get ready or to get warm. And I really think that when you play a team that does that, it's noticeable. And it really helps keep the game moving. And again, if you play, we played a couple of teams here in Chicago. Well, it was one that I really remember, the Bulls Academy, that they were real quick, you know, really on top of it on the ball. And they got out there and were ready to go. So I think that's, you know, little things. Just getting the pitcher ready quickly is important. It keeps the game moving. And these games, they move so quickly. These are 9-inning games. They're playing in high school. Again, 4 games a day. Usually they're only going to last 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours, but between 2 and 3 hours and they're done. They move very quickly. It's really fun to watch.
Absolutely. And you're talking about, you know, on top of it, when you got great pitching, great defense, you know, and you got guys moving, you can make these games shorter, and we can learn a lot from that. You know, the other, you know, big question, Major League Baseball's brought it up. I know they're researching. It's going to take some time, but you know, we traditionally we're doing things that we've done in the past and say, okay, you got to have 8 pitches. Well, do you really? You know, can you warm up? You know, especially in the big leagues, if the mound's very similar, can you warm up, you know, a little earlier and get maybe only a 3-4 pitches and speed up the game a little bit? So that's things to talk about. Great discussion, Tom. I got to know, we got about 10 minutes left. I want to know what are some of the things that, you know, you kind of looked at during games or any, and, you know, especially as far as baseball is concerned. And you just said, wow, that's different, but we really, you know, I'm not sure why they did that.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot, too much that I said, I'm not sure why they did that. But one thing, you know, there's a lot of like culture things that just wouldn't work, in the United States. So one thing that they do after the game, which I think is a great thing, but then when you think about the U.S., you're just like, okay, well, that wouldn't go over well with the kids here. Like, it just wouldn't stick. There's a lot of ceremony to Japanese baseball. So what happens after the game is that each team, there's a little ceremony where the winning team hears their school song, played over the loudspeakers. Sometimes they sing along. And then when the song's over, they hustle down the sidelines and they stand in front of their supporter section. And then they all take a bow. And you saw this in the Little League World Series today with Japan. After the game, they actually bowed to the opposing team's supporters. And then they bowed to their own team supporters. I really think it's a great thing. But then if you're turning around and you're asking kids in the U.S., well, we got to bow to our fans, you know, just culturally, that's a little strange to us here. It's not ingrained in us. But I think some level of appreciating the fans is an interesting concept and, you know, something that could be added as a ceremony, maybe after the game, but maybe you wouldn't have the kids bow. Just one other thing I noticed, and this doesn't quite fit with your question, but it is something that we added to our team here, is, and I noticed this with the Little League World Series last year, was that when they go through the handshake line at the end, and that's not I don't think that's a common tradition in Japan. Like, that's more of an American thing to go through a handshake line. What they'll do in Japan is they'll generally, after the game, the two teams will line up across from each other and they'll bow to each other. And then I guess there is, after that, there is a little bit of handshaking or hugs that go on after the game. But when the Little League World Series team was playing from Japan, what they did in the handshake line was a little thing, but they removed their hats. So they took their hats off as they walked through the line, you know, just showing respect for the other team. So that was one thing that we added. So, you know, while bowing in the U.S. isn't a big cultural thing here, as it is over there. You know, removing your hat's kind of culturally understood here. So that's one thing that we could take over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a great thing because, we know that culturally we can't just change our culture and do it just the way, the Japanese do everything. But what a great way to honor other people or say hello. And, what about when a coach is talking to you? I know the Japanese take their hats off. That's just a sign of respect. I have, just to give you an idea, Tom, it's a pet peeve. And that doesn't mean everybody, it's right or wrong. Just depends on the individual coach. But, man, I can't stand when somebody's talking to you and you got your glasses on, you got sunglasses on. I feel that if you're going to, if you're going to talk to somebody, take your glasses off, show respect for that other person, look them in the eye. So there are certain things that we can transfer into our culture and address with our young people, from a ethical standpoint, from a respect standpoint, not everything. But here's the other thing. What did Tom take from this when it came to the games? What were the things that impressed you about Japanese baseball during the game, whether it be offense or defense or pitching? Some of the things that really impressed you a lot and why?
So obviously there's not a lot of walks, and that's something that you hit on. They throw a lot of strikes. So there's not a lot of walks that happen. Defensively, there's not many errors, if any at all. They're very disciplined on defense. They make the plays. One thing that I've been thinking about, and I've never seen this before I went to Japan, and I still want to think about it a little bit more, is, there's been a lot of talk, I guess, on Twitter and some of the infield coaches about footwork when you catch the ball as an infielder. Kind of the common phrase is you take a two-step or a four-step foot pattern. One thing that I saw the Japanese do, and I guess, like I said, I never saw this before, but what they would do is they would catch the ball on the infield, and if they had time, you would see them almost run. They'd take several steps, and it was almost like they were running towards first base, and then they would gather themselves and then they would make the throw to first base. So that's something I want to think about a little bit more, because I was trying to see, well, did they actually do that in a game, or is that just a practice thing? And I didn't see it too much in the game, but that was one thing I noticed definitely during pregame, is this difference in footwork, is that they, again, catch the ball, almost take a couple of running steps towards their target, and then they'd set themselves and throw.
Very interesting. I'll tell you what, that leads into 10 years ago, I think it was, maybe in 15, I was working with a collegiate team in Japan, and the coach said to me, he said, listen, would you go over there and work with the infielders? I said, sure, love to. And I got there, and I started doing some drills, and then I started realizing, you know what? These guys are pretty good. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot that I can teach them, and I've watched them for 45 minutes take infield. And, maybe seeing two balls being thrown away and one ball missed. It's just amazing, and like you talk about, there's some, they may have a little different technique, and as good as anybody, we see different fielding techniques here in the States too. But the bottom line is they get the job done pretty good. And I know it was real tough for me to go over there and try to change them or teach them anything because they were doing it really well.
Yeah. And to mention too, Pete, obviously the bunting is a huge thing over there. So, they bunt, all the time. While we may not bunt a lot here in the U.S. and there might be some debate about that, I think it's a good reminder, just about bunting and maybe its importance. So seeing that, I found interesting.
Absolutely. And as good as anybody else, the bunting game is getting away from us. I know it's getting away at the big league level, and there's reasons for it, that's another show. But, at the younger levels, it seems to be getting away from it a little bit too. One interesting thing that I do want to bring up, and I don't know if you've seen this, but I was just watching it on TV, and I taped it. Two things. One, we know this, at the Little League World Series, up till 2 days ago, they had 22 strikeouts and zero walks, and you mentioned that in your thing. That doesn't mean they're going to win every game, but obviously they've got consistency. The other thing is, I noticed their bunting technique on the Little League World Series. Their top hand was actually wrapped around the bat, a little bit lower on the barrel, but wrapped around the bat, something we would not highly recommend because it's not safe, but they seem to be getting away with that. Did you see any other technique or anything else, any technique and any other skill that you kind of said, whoa, that's interesting?
The infield footwork was interesting. We did see that over there as well about the bunting form that they would wrap their hands around. I think that that's kind of maybe an old school teach, and they still follow that over there. But that was one thing that we noticed as well. Nothing else that I can remember offhand here, Pete. I do want to mention one other more kind of general point, but as far as technique goes, no. So just to mention, I guess, since we're getting on time here, the one thing I did want to mention was just how impressive the resolve of the Japanese is. And you see this across a couple of different areas, and you already mentioned this. I mean, they're playing these games in 95 degree heat, high humidity. I mean, the heat to me was almost overwhelming.
Yes.
While you're there and you're trying to sightsee on the side, and it's like you're sweating through all the clothes you have while you're doing this. But it doesn't seem to bother the Japanese at all. It's pretty interesting. But also, so you got the teams are playing these games in high heat, high humidity. So strong resolve being on display there. I mean, obviously you've got the pitchers who are throwing complete games, which is, you know, a different discussion. So they're pitching through the whole game, but then even the bands, the way that the bands would play, they were so intense and they would not let up. You know, their team could be down by 5 runs in the last inning and they're still going at it hard, you know, as if it was the first inning and the score was 0-0. They had been playing the whole game, but they were still playing hard, with a lot of resolve. And funny enough, you also saw this among the beer vendors as well. It was something else that I was really impressed by. So that may take some people aback, is that they do sell beer at these high school games.
Yeah.
And how it works in Japan is that typically it's young women are selling the beer, and so they have basically beer kegs on their back. So it's not like in the U.S. where they're selling like cans of beer, things like that. They have the beer keg on their back and they're going up and down the aisle selling beer. These women, they would work, you know, like we said, 4 games a day. They'd get there at 7 a.m. Yes, they're selling beer at 7 a.m. And they would walk up and down the stairs all around the stadium in the heat, in the sun. And you could never tell that they had been working, you know, maybe 8 hours that day in high heat, high humidity. And it's the same thing, you know, across the bands that played, across the teams that played, the beer vendors. You could just never tell that they were phased. They always put on their best face, always smiling, always giving good customer service. So I was just really impressed across, you know, these different areas, the teams, the bands, the beer vendors, just the strong resolve of the people. And just the strength, you know, the mental toughness that that they had. And obviously, as we mentioned earlier, that has to be something, at least from the baseball side, that was trained into them, because they put in a lot of long hours in practice. So I just think that that's something that's really emphasized with the youth over there, with the kids. And you see it on display at the tournament.
Tom, you attended, we got one more question about this, and then, you know, anything we missed that you thought was very important, I'm going to give you the time to talk about that. Last thing here, you attended youth practice. Give us an idea what you saw at the youth practice that maybe is interesting, helped you out, and it can help coaches and players and parents understand the development of the game better.
Oh, yeah, sure. So a couple things that were interesting. I've been to Japan a couple times, and what something I've tried to do is I've always wanted to see practice, and you know, you helped me with practice a couple of years ago, but what I'll generally try to do is just try to keep an eye out for practices that are going on while I'm traveling through a city. You know, riding the train, I'll look out the window, I'll see if there are baseball fields, and I'll see if there are teams on them. If I see teams on them, I'll make a note of it to try to return to that area at some point, maybe that day, or, you know, in this case, what had happened was last year when I was taking the train out to the airport in Tokyo is pretty far from downtown. So you have to take kind of a long train or a bus to get to downtown from the airport or vice versa. So last year I was heading out to the airport on the way home. I was looking out the window and I saw we passed this area with a ton of fields, and there was a lot of teams out there practicing, having games, things like that. So made a note of it, marked it on the map. And so this year when I came back, I went back. I made plans. I said, okay, I've got a Saturday afternoon coming up that I don't have anything planned. I'm going to plan to go to those fields I saw and see what I could see. And went out there, and, you know, luckily there were a lot of teams out there practicing. You know, it was wide open, so I could get up there and see what's going on. So I caught the beginning of a youth practice, and these kids were probably 8 or 9 years old, so pretty young guys. And I caught the beginning of it, which was good, you know, because I could see it from the start and see what was happening right from the beginning. And the one thing that was interesting about the beginning of the workout, so they went through, you know, kind of regular calisthenics, running, stuff like that. But it was all run by the players. The coach, you could tell who the coach was, but he was busy setting up the field. He was lining the field. He was cleaning the mound, cleaning the plate, stuff like that. So he was not involved in the warm-up at all. And these are players, again, 8 or 9 years old, so very young. But there was obviously someone among them who was a leader, who was kind of directing things. So they did the entire warm up by themselves, without the coach. They would have done the throwing, on their own as well. One of the kids didn't have a partner, so there was an adult that was out there, working with one of the kids. And a big thing in Japan that I've noticed, and I haven't quite dug into, I mean, it makes sense though, is that they use a lot of like rubber baseballs. So they don't use typical hard balls like we do in the U.S. I mean, they will for games, but for what I've seen in practices, it seems like they tend to use these rubber baseballs, which from a safety perspective makes a lot of sense. And especially, you know, if you're coaching a younger age group, that was one mistake I made when I coached an 8-year-old team a couple years ago. And, you know, in hindsight, I probably could have had a little bit more impact or developed the skills a little better by using tennis balls, but for some of their catching and throwing skills. But anyways, these are younger kids, 8 or 9 years old in Japan. They're using rubber baseballs, so it's probably a little safer, so you can get away with a little bit more letting them do some things on their own. And you saw a lot of the habits from high school kind of filtering down to the youth level. So one thing I didn't mention about the high school tournament was, and then again, this is something you couldn't really necessarily demand. I mean, it'd come across a little weird, I think, if you demanded this in the U.S., but anytime the coach would talk or have a conference, all the players would remove their hats. They remove their hats and they're all looking at the coach, you know, making eye contact. So I saw that at the high school tournament. I saw the same thing at this 8 and 9 year old practice before the practice began. Kids were all gathered around the coach. Coach was sitting on the bench, talking to the kids. They all had their hats removed and, talking to the coach. So I thought that was interesting. The players kind of leading the action. They did a lot of things that you see here, you know, like getting on their knees and doing short hops. The other interesting thing that they did was they seemed to emphasize throwing balls on a one hop to their partner. So they would start to play catch, and they would back up to a certain distance, let's say 70, 90 feet, something like that. And then they would intentionally throw it on a hop to their partner. So they would throw it to their partner, bounce it one time, the partner would catch it. So I thought that was interesting. I think it's maybe a good way to train kids to handle the baseball, handle hops, read the ball, rather than just having them throw it in the air back to your partner. So throwing it on a hop, I thought that was interesting. And the other thing just about this practice was that it was very long. I think I may have already mentioned, I stuck around for about 2 hours, and it's very hot, sunny as in the afternoon. And after 2 hours, I was like, I got to go, because I had to catch a train that night to go to another town. But after 2 hours, these guys were still going. They had been doing this one drill for 45 minutes, which was basically a four corner drill. So nothing really too innovative or, you know, really shocking or anything like that. It was just a four corner drill that they were throwing around, but they did that for a long time. And the other thing that was interesting was some parents were there at the practice, and basically they had what looked like a little campsite set up. They had a big tent set up. They must have had food and water over there, because every once in a while the kids would run over there during breaks. So the people just looked like they were going to be out there for a long time. They were camped out. So I expected that practice was going to go on for another 2 or 3 hours, even after I left.
Absolutely. Something I took from all this, and we're going to end the show here in a minute with you saying anything about, you know, that you wanted to mention that maybe we didn't get a chance to discuss. But one of the things that I took from this, and I heard you say it, was habits. Boy, they're creating habits, and good ones, at a very young level. The other one is responsibility. Sounds like they're giving young kids responsibility early on. And I could tell you this, because traditionally, and I want to mention it to our audience in the U.S. and around the world, we're getting away from it from the States. But when you look at some of the top countries in the world, when it comes to Japan, Cuba, Australia, you look at Canada, there's some countries up there with not a lot of players. When I compare it to the U.S., U.S. has 26 million amateur players. Cuba has only 60,000. You know, the Curacao has a per capita major league player, the highest, and they have the less players than anybody. When you look at Canada, Australia, same thing, less players. Look at Japan, about 6 million, which is not a lot compared to what we have. When their country has 126 million people. One thing that you mentioned, and I want to stress on the show, is yes, they play a lot of games, but they practice. All these countries practice more than they play. Whatever the ratio is game-wise, they're still practicing a lot more. And that's something I want to stress on the show, because of the fact that we're getting away from that, and I think we're hurting our development in the U.S. That's one thing that I took from all this, Tom. But the other one, I want to see if this works. But let's hear this for a second. I know it's not real loud. Just picking up a few sounds from Koshian to give the audience a little example. I'm looking at your video, and this stadium is packed. Just packed to the tilt. It is unbelievable. So just a little sound with the podcast. Tom, let's do it. Let's end it here with something that I missed. Maybe something I should have talked about or asked you a question about that you felt was extremely important, and then we'll end the show on this.
I think we covered a lot of ground here, Pete. That's some things that I would say. If you can get to Japan, I definitely recommend it. Obviously for baseball, but then also just for the culture. It's not quite as expensive as you might think. Getting there is kind of what's expensive, the flight. But once you get there, you can usually find hotels that are pretty reasonable. It's just a really great experience. One thing that I'll mention is obviously respect is very big in their culture, but so is customer service and just taking care of foreigners. So just one quick story. The Tuesday that I went to Koshien, I didn't have a ticket. So I was planning to wait in line, and I got there a little bit later just to see how the lines for the later games worked. And just to back up a second, the day before I came across another American who was at Koshien. You know, I knew he was American basically by his looks, but then also he was carrying a Trader Joe's bag. So we ended up talking. He lived in Japan for many years. And was usually goes to the games every year, once a year. And, we talked for a while, exchanged contact information, said goodbye. And then I went to my assigned seat, and then later on he came in and he was coming into my same section. And I said, "Hey Glenn, how'd you get in here?" And, he sat down next to me. We talked for a while, and he ended up telling me that he said that one approach to get tickets at Koshien is just stand around and look lost. Someone will help you. And what ended up happening was someone came up to him and offered him a ticket and said, I can't use this ticket. Can you use it? You know, you're a foreigner. You came a long ways. Can you use this ticket?" He said, sure, I'll take it. He tried to pay for the ticket, obviously, but the woman wouldn't take any money. So the next day, I went to the stadium, and I was looking at the lines. I'd gotten there too late to get into the line. And I said, well, and I looked around for scalpers, but scalping is a pretty taboo thing in Japan. So it's not as easy as it is here in the States. So I said, well, I'm going to try the Glenn approach. I'm just going to stand and look a little lost and see what happens. And no kidding, within 15 minutes, someone walked up to me and said, "Hey, I have a ticket. Do you want it?" And I said, "Sure." And, you know, we exchanged business cards. He was a Japanese guy. We went into the stadium. He said goodbye. And I went to my seat. And a half hour later, he had already sent me an email. He said, "You know, sorry, I forgot to mention this before, but here's all this information about the stadium. You know, if you need an English guide, you can go here. If you need food, you can go there." So just goes to tell you, they really want to make sure that foreigners have a nice time there. They'll go out of their way to help you. It's very safe. You don't have to worry about anything. You could leave your cell phone in a crowded train station. Nobody will take it. You can leave your bag at your seat. They'll collect it and it'll be there for you at the lost and found. So very safe. I don't want to end this without saying though, Pete, just, you know, some thanks to, Joe Perona, who I mentioned earlier. He leads the Chicago Warrior program, has done a lot for me over the years, given me a lot of advice. And then some other guys I coach with, Dave Rivera and Mike Cott, both Dave and Mike have been real helpful for my coaching over at Von Steuben. Been great to work with those guys.
All right. Fantastic, Tom. Want to thank you for being on the show. This was outstanding. A lot of great stuff about Koshien baseball in Japan. Thanks for being on the show, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pete. I love it. Thanks for having me here.
All right. That was Tom McGuire. And listen, don't take this wrong. You know, I bring up Japanese baseball. I talk about it. Tom loves it. Also the culture. That doesn't mean that they're perfect, you know, but does mean this: we can learn a lot from them. And I know in the last 20 some years, I've learned a lot from them. I know Tom's learned from them. We both continue to learn from the Japanese, whether it be baseball, whether it be off the field, for the respect of the game. So we want to thank Tom McGuire, the assistant varsity baseball coach, infield instructor, first base coach for Von Steuben High School in Chicago, and also the manager of the Chicago Warriors. He mentioned some of the guys he works with. Thanks, guys, for what you do for the game of baseball. And also want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, from the Lineup Media Group. Thanks, Brian, for all the hard work you put in putting this show together. I want to thank our audience, our new listeners, and our very loyal listeners. Thank you for being on, for listening to the show. Do us a favor, go to our social media, Baseball Out on Twitter, Baseball Outside the Box on Facebook. Do us a favor and just forward all that social media information out to as many baseball people as you know, just to get the show out. Also, hopefully, more education for everybody. This show is one that, again, has some of the best people in the world when it comes to the game of baseball, and we love the challenge, the status quo. And don't forget to email me at petercaliendo@att.net. Any questions, comments, and different things, something you did like or didn't like about the show, let me know about it. Love to hear from you. That's the way we get better. So, again, thank you, everybody. Don't forget, listen to our next show, which will be coming up with Nelson Gord, one of the Caliendo sports coaches that was in Japan, when we're going to talk to him about the competition at the youth levels that we had throughout the Tokyo area. We're going to ask him some of the different questions about Japanese baseball, what they encountered. That was Nelson's first time in Japan. So that's going to be a very interesting topic. It'll continue to talk about Japanese baseball. So folks, thank you again for listening to the show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I want to wish you a great coaching day, and I'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.